Hacking, data, and identity theft are causing devastating problems. Globex Data is the solution for privacy and security in the digital world. Switzerland has the world's strictest privacy laws, and Globex Data's Swiss-hosted platform is outside of big tech with no data mining. Globex Data is now launching in the USA, offering email and messaging privacy and security to all Americans. Globex Data Limited, stock trading symbol SWISF. Web address, globexdatagroup.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang, my colleague at Gordon G. Chang, Gatestone Newsweek and The Hill. And we welcome Professor James Holmes, first holder of the Wiley Chair of Maritime Strategy at the U.S. Naval War College. He blogs at The Naval Diplomat. Most importantly, he's here as a surface warfare officer veteran to comment on issues to do with the fleet. But we begin with a very odd episode that I missed in the news. James, a very good evening to you. According to Reuters, in these last days, China drove away a U.S. warship on the anniversary of a tribunal ruling. This had to do with the conflict in the South China Sea. Did I miss this? Did the U.S. Navy keep it secret from you, James? All of us, that the Chinese Navy drove away a warship? Good evening to you, James.
Hi, John. Hi, Gordon. Yeah, I think it's sort of standard fare, but I think the symbolism of the date, the 5-year anniversary of the tribunal ruling, the international tribunal ruling against China's claims in the South China Sea. I think and the fact that we did a freedom of navigation passage on that day. I think it's basically just for domestic consumption. Yeah, the Americans came and we kicked them out of waters, which are our own. I mean, that's basically the Chinese claim. These are sovereign waters, sovereign territory, and we've expelled the United States or the U.S. warship that dared come into this territory. So again, sort of standard fare.
This is an incident like many other incidences where the U.S. Navy is sailing in international waters. Sometimes called an innocent passage, sometimes called freedom of navigation. Have the Chinese come up with a variety in their response, or do they win every contest? They always defeat the Navy. Is that their response, James?
Yeah, well, I think that would be their party line, is that they do that. I mean, if such a thing were possible, you might expect them to show how they actually expelled the Benfold, which was the destroyer from those waters. And one thing to keep in mind is I would watch the interplay between the South China Sea in particular and also the Black Sea. We've got the major exercise in the Black Sea over the past couple of weeks. Russia has taken a really, really strict and a really, really hard line on innocent passage on the territorial sea, that the water is 12 miles off your shores. So I don't know whether they're Moscow and Beijing are collaborating on these things, but I bet you they're consulting on stance that they should take in those waters.
Gordon, you have a question for the professor.
James, the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, to which China is a signatory and which it has ratified, clearly allows warships for innocent passages through the territorial waters of another state. Why does China think that the U.S. Navy was violating the Chinese territorial waters? I don't understand it.
Well, I mean, this is a discussion we've had a number of times before over the years. I mean, if you look at the map of the South China Sea, as China sees it, with that 9-dash line enclosing most of the South China Sea, it has been for a long time trying to redefine those waters, not as high sea waters that are open to vessels and aircraft of all nations, but as Chinese territorial waters. Which is why you've seen them try to essentially airbrush a lot of the freedoms of the sea that are laid out in the law of the sea and in customary law over the years. So this is part and parcel of that. They would like to make that their own national territory, all of the South China Sea almost.
James, there's a report circulating in the media, and I've listened to one podcast reflecting on the report about surface warfare officers. You're a veteran surface warfare officer. The report I have not read. I plan to, but what I understand was upsetting to everyone who has or has not read it, is that it's emphasizing that the modern Navy, the Navy right now confronting the People's Liberation Army Navy, is the Navy of officers who are concerned about filling out the right forms and saying the right things, as opposed to making ships run on time and dealing with the honestly hot confrontation with China. Is that an exaggeration, James? You teach this, so how to measure this over history? Have there been reports like this before?
There have been some reports over the years, most recently, and in fact, this is a report that's referred to in the report that you're referencing, the one that's just appeared by a gentleman by the name of Vice Admiral Mobile, basically a year ago, detailing maintenance shortcomings, especially in the Aegis community, which is the cruiser and destroyer community. And that's so there have been warning bells sounded about this. In fact, I've written about it myself. One of the things in the report was really sort of daunting to me, because I used to teach division officers. Around the turn of the century, shortly after the turn of the century, the service warfare community shut down initial accession training for newly commissioned officers, basically handed them a stack of CDs and told them to go to their first ship and learn it for themselves. If you can imagine, can you even imagine doing that with an aviator, with a person who flies airplanes? Learn it yourself, get in the plane and go. And yet that's what was done. So that's one of the really damning things in the report.
And the idea that paper pushing, or the idea that your comments are critical to your advancing career, is that new or has that always been true, James?
You know, a lot of this stuff, and maybe this is actually a bad thing as well. I mean, a lot of this stuff is, again, a very long standing. The idea that a peacetime Navy, I mean, the perverse thing about winning big, like as we did in World War II, is that if you have a prolonged period of peace, it lets you then into all sorts of bad habits, obsessing over paperwork. I mean, all of these things, obsessing over online training and all of these things that we have today. And there's only so many hours of the day. It's a zero sum contest between those things and between maintenance and training and on and on. So my sense is that the trend lines have gotten worse, but even when I was in uniform, there was some of this.
Gordon?
James, before World War II, was the Navy affected by the same problems that went away because of the urgency of the war, or is this something new?
No, it's not something new at all. In fact, there was a wonderful book written about the Royal Navy from 1805, the Battle of Trafalgar, up to World War I, basically saying that Napoleon was defeated so thoroughly that the Royal Navy had no enemy for basically a century. And again, it got into all these sorts of bad habits. This is a story that's told because it has been. 1944 was our last major fleet battle. That's a mighty long time. The interwar years, I think, were a little bit different because of the Great Depression, because of the Naval Arms Accords coming out of World War I. We did get into bad habits, but I think it was a little bit less. It was also a shorter period of time.
Readiness, James. You know, recently the foreign minister of Japan made a very blunt statement that Taiwan will be defended. That immediately assumes that the U.S. Navy will participate because we, as I understand it, work very closely with the Japanese and have our facilities in Japan that take care of the Seventh Fleet, the East Asia area entirely. At this point, is the Navy concerned about readiness and the surface warfare officers and even the maintenance of its ships? Is that a concern now that we have what you'd have to say is a leaner budget for the Navy?
Well, I just sort of two things. You mentioned the Japanese statement about defending Taiwan. That's way out in front of even where the United States is on the defense of Taiwan. I mean, we pursue what they would call strategic ambiguity. We don't say whether we would defend Taiwan directly and so forth. So it's really unusual to see Japan get out so far ahead of the United States on this. As far as readiness, yeah, I mean, well, I think the good news is I think the Navy leadership is taking these problems seriously, but as the old saying goes, it takes a long time to turn a battleship. A big organization like the Navy, it takes time to change a culture. That's what this report is about the fighting culture of the surface warfare fleet. I think the leadership is trying to do that, but again, it takes a long time, and it takes constant, steady, hard pressure from the top leadership. So I think things are actually starting to turn around, but again, I think it might be a while.
Gordon?
James, with the death of 17 sailors with those two collisions involving Arleigh Burke destroyers, You would think that that was, what, 3-4 years ago? You would think that would have changed the culture immediately, but you're talking about problems that they were in existence at that time, and seems like they haven't been remedied.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, it generally for human beings generally, but especially for big organizations like the Navy, I mean, it does oftentimes take something really bad to happen. But again, I guess the question is, what magnitude of badness does it have to be in order to compel the organization to get serious? I think we felt like we were on a good trajectory after 2017, but then of course we lost a major amphibious warship to fire last year for reasons that remain undisclosed by the Navy. So I think there may be more to it than that. And by the way, the 94% of the respondents of the veterans and the active duty officers interviewed for this report agreed that there is a cultural or a leadership problem connecting all of these things. 94%. That's almost unanimous.
James Holmes, first holder of the Wiley Chair of Maritime Strategy at the Naval War College. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Data privacy. Hacking, ransomware, and data theft have become devastating problems for businesses and individuals. Globex Data has the solution. Switzerland has the world's strictest data privacy laws, and Globex Data's Swiss-hosted secure application, spelled S-E-K-U-R, uses a proprietary technology outside of big tech, which means your data remains private and secure. Globex Data just signed two telecom giants to distribute its secure communication solution to over 400 million people in 30 Latin American and Asian countries. Secure is the solution for messaging and email privacy with no data or phone number mining. Secure users can message non-secure users in full privacy and security using chat by invites. Globex Data is now available in the U.S., bringing messaging and email privacy and security to all Americans. This Data Privacy Minute has been brought to you by Globex Data Limited. Stock trading symbol SWISF. Web address globexdata.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.